From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Today is United Nations World Humanitarian Day. In that spirit, we'll meet two people whose life work is serving others. Cindy Williams founded Loving Arms, a nonprofit that provides shelter and resources for young people experiencing homelessness in Baltimore. And we hear from Lucy Steinitz, a senior technical advisor for protection at Catholic Relief Services. She attends to populations that have experienced trauma, helping them find ways to heal and thrive.
I try to build up resilience, that ability to come out of the worst emotional depths and to find a new path for the future, to find a sense of balance, to have the strength to pick up the pieces and move forward.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. The 2010 earthquake in Haiti, the Syrian refugee crisis, Hurricane Katrina, decades of famine in sub-Saharan Africa, the rising rate of homelessness in the U.S. No matter the country or the cause, catastrophes and emergencies mobilize dedicated humanitarian workers who administer relief during crisis or provide solutions in times of need. Today is United Nations World Humanitarian Day, so we're taking a few minutes to recognize those who work globally and locally to improve the lives of others. Later in the show, we'll meet the founder of Loving Arms, a nonprofit that provides shelter and resources for homeless young people in Maryland. First, we'll take an international perspective with Lucy Steinitz, Senior Technical Advisor for Protection at Catholic Relief Services, which is headquartered in Baltimore. Steinitz is part of the CRS Peacebuilding and Justice Unit. She works with populations that have experienced trauma. Before that, she did humanitarian work along with her family in Namibia and Ethiopia for 20 years. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Good morning.
What does your work with the Peacebuilding and Justice Unit entail?
We look at crisis, both try to prevent them in advance. For example, if it's a situation or country that's very prone to political crises, to help folks mitigate that and avoid the worst that can happen. In response to crisis, we go out immediately after the crisis, but also a little bit longer term, because this is never something that gets resolved in a day or two or week or even year. And some of the ramifications go on for a long time. Personal trauma, the effects of loss and of fear being one of them. And that's my particular arena. I'm a social worker by profession, and so I try to build up resilience, that ability to come out of the worst emotional depths, and to find a new path for the future, to find a sense of balance, to have the strength to pick up the pieces and move forward.
Give me an example, because there's a lot there that I'm not sure I can picture.
Sure.
Like, are you invited in, for example, by a country?
Well, that's a very important point that you raise. We only go places where the government invites us in. And often we work in conjunction with the church, and I mean that very broadly because it's not just the Catholic Church or Christian churches, but it could be the Islamic community or the Buddhist community, depending what part of the world we're in. But then we have some folks in the agency who are especially trained to move in very quickly with food, with shelter, working with other organizations to create a holistic response after a disaster has struck. In my case, well, I can give an example. So the Gambia, which is this tiny country, a sliver of a country in West Africa, nestled with a bit on the Atlantic Ocean, otherwise surrounded by Senegal. It had been ruled for 22 years by Yahya Jammeh, a president that became increasingly dictatorial, lots of torture, lots of oppression. And finally, he was f- forced out. A new president came in and said, you know, one of the things we need to do is to have a Truth and Reconciliation and Reparations Commission. We need to relieve people from the silence, from the horror, from the pain of what happened, learn what happened, bring people to justice where that's required, and move forward. This is a Muslim country, overwhelmingly Muslim. There's a tiny little Christian population. And the new president, Adama Barrow said, well, let's look at a community that's been kind of neutral in the past. And he asked the Catholic Church, that's small there, can you help? So we came in. A colleague of mine who's done a lot of this work, who's Cameroonian, and I worked together with the local TRRC, the local Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission, training around social cohesion, around trauma resilience. They wanted to work with victims and help them recover, regain some sense of balance so that they could feel acknowledged for what happened, but not imprisoned by that pain and loss. And we provided training that had been developed in Africa that then they applied. So we're generally behind the scenes in that case, working with local people, very capable and committed people, who will actually then implement the programs and the services.
What does peace building consist of?
Peace building is a multi-tiered effort that we engage in together with local stakeholders, local community members. We talk about the three B's: binding, bonding, and bridging. So if people would see me, they would see that I'm hugging myself for the binding. That means essentially building peace, finding peace inside yourself, overcoming the trauma that you've experienced in war, in conflict, as a result of terror, so that you have that strength to go forward and to rebuild your life. It means bonding because you do that together with people in your own family and your own community, your own clan or ethnic group. And so you build a network so that together there is strength and you can bring the different talents and resources in unison to build that life. And the bridging is that you then move to creating relationships and finding common avenues with the other group, that ethnic group that had been in conflict with yours, those that had been your political opposition and you had been theirs. So that would be the bridging, the social cohesion that's built across groups. And you do that at the local community or district level, but you also build upwards because we want to create an environment where the government and those at senior leadership, be that religious leadership or political leadership, can do the same across the country and create an environment so that peace can really reign long term.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Lucy Steinitz, Senior Technical Advisor at Catholic Relief Services. We're talking about her work with CRS in peace building and justice. Is humanitarian work something you knew you always wanted to do?
I'm a child of Holocaust survivors. I'm no longer a child by any means, but I think it was very much my parents' experiences and how they rebuilt their lives after the Holocaust, being survivors, being refugees, then to this country, that really propelled me into this kind of work. I was executive director of Jewish Family Services right here in Maryland for 15 years before our family picked up and moved to Africa. And I kind of thought that I had left that work and that experience behind when I was in a very different circumstance. But I found when I was in the Gambia that much of my parents' experiences, that philosophy of never again, of building a future, which is what the president of the Gambia said, that never again will we have this kind of experience happen to our country. So we have to learn how to recover and move forward. Well, I thought I can really use the tools that I learned as a child that kind of got intrinsically built into me Some of my early research and work with survivors in this country are very applicable.
What would you say is the most important thing you've learned from your humanitarian work?
I think I've learned that people are phenomenal. You find people who come out of the depths and are such a huge inspiration. I'll tell you another story. So in South Sudan, we provide a lot of emergency food and assistance work, teaching people how to start gardens again in new areas where the soil is different than what they'd experienced before, but they're now refugees and living in another area, trying to get different groups, Nuer and Dinka ethnic groups, for example, to work together. Well, I went to a small village that had been completely destroyed. I mean, this had been the capital of the county. There was nothing left, no school, no health center. There were just the remnants. And the local staff said, this is where we're from. And, you know, we're taking money out of our own salaries, and we plan to rebuild the school. As people come back here, we're going to give an education to the children because we had an education in that school. And I thought that was amazing. And it was true enough. There were 45 local staff people who, in addition to feeding their own families and their families' families because they're the wage earners for 5, 10, 15 people, they were giving money to the school. Well, I gave money to that school, too. And I just got some photographs a couple of weeks ago that the school has opened. They had to import tin for a roof, and the local people took the bricks that had been brought in and they built it themselves, and they hired a teacher because the government had not yet agreed, but hopefully will, that this should become a government school again. And there's hundreds of children going to school, and the first grade is the largest. Well, Sheila, why would the first grade be the largest? Because these children had never been to school before. They weren't just 6 or 7. They were 8 and 9 and 10 years old. And they were so excited because they were going to be able to go to school. They were going to learn to read and write and maybe have a future. That this was coming from local staff out of an additional commitment that they could reach into themselves and decide we're going to go one step further. And I see that over and over again. That's what I learn, and that's what keeps me going.
Lucy Steinitz, what a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Lucy Steinitz is Senior Technical Advisor for Protection at Catholic Relief Services, which is headquartered in Baltimore. She works in the Peace Building and Justice Unit with populations that have experienced trauma. Today is United Nations World Humanitarian Day. Short break now, and then we'll turn our focus to humanitarian work locally. We'll talk to the founder of a homeless shelter for youth. I'm Sheila Cast. This is On the Record. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're marking World Humanitarian Day by talking with people dedicated to serving others. Earlier, we focused on the global initiatives of Catholic Relief Services. Now, a local humanitarian, Cindy Williams, founder and executive director of Loving Arms, where she and her staff provide short-term shelter and resources for young people experiencing homelessness. Loving Arms is Maryland's only shelter for unaccompanied youth. Williams is joining us by phone from a sister shelter located in Florence, South Carolina. Welcome to On the Record, Cindy.
Thank you, Sheila. Thank you for having me.
Why did you start Loving Arms?
Well, because there was a need when it came to my attention. The agency as a whole was started 20 years ago. This year will be 20 years. We started the agency to address the need of youth who were entering the juvenile justice system, many whose families were not familiar with the juvenile justice system or the family court system. And unfortunately, because of that lack of information, many times were arriving to court ill-prepared for what they were about to face. And what troubled my spirit was that many times these children and families were given information or being told about what process they were about to face in the hallways just before they were entering the courtrooms. And so the agency actually started as a resource, a community resource for children and families who were at risk of becoming incarcerated. So that was the beginning of the agency. We kind of evolved into working with runaway and homeless minors and children who are victims of domestic violence and sex trafficking over the years thereafter. But the inception was to keep kids out of the juvenile justice system.
So Loving Arms more and more worked with homeless young people. How many homeless young people are there in Baltimore?
It is actually a very difficult population to count because many of these children and young adults, unfortunately, are not able to be counted because they are either outside of the radar of law enforcement or mental health and social service systems. These young people may be what we call couch surfing, so they may be staying with friends and boyfriends and sometimes even strangers, unfortunately. So even though these young people may be attending school, may be attending activities with their peers, they may not be sharing with individuals that they don't have a place, a safe place, to go at the end of the night to sleep because of fear of what might happen to them. So it's a very difficult number to really count. It's estimated that there's about 1,400 youth on the street without safe shelter on any given night. But again, there's no way to really track that number. And I do want to say, you know, when we talk about working with unaccompanied homeless youth, we're really talking two populations of young people. So we're talking children, and that would be unaccompanied, runaway and unaccompanied minors, and that would be individuals under the age of 18. And then we're also addressing and talking about young adults, and so which are also classified as youth, because under the HUD definition, anyone under the age of 24 is considered a youth.
That's Cindy Williams here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. She's founder and executive director of Loving Arms, a nonprofit that provides a safe space and resources for young people experiencing homelessness in Baltimore City. What does Loving Arms provide for young people? What kinds of services?
Loving Arms provides outreach. We have a full outreach team that goes out and provides what we call street and site-based outreach. The site-based portion of it would be going to schools, going to organizations that serve children, rec centers, and sharing information, putting out information, giving out supplies. We also have a street team that actually goes out and what we call canvasses communities, where we actually ride around, okay, to see if we see young people. And, you know, we share resources with them. We give them things like water, hand sanitizer. We pack bags that has non-perishable food items in it. But we just make sure that they are aware that there are resources. If they need medical attention, we share with them where they can go get free medical services. If they need to see a dentist, or if they need substance abuse counseling, or if they need mental health services, and if they need shelter. You know, we also help young adults complete application to get into what's called the coordinated access system for permanent long-term housing or rapid rehousing services.
How many young people can you house at a time?
We can house 12 young people comfortably. We have housed 15 because we certainly can utilize other, you know, cots and the sofas if we need them.
And how long can they stay?
Under the federal guidelines, young people can stay up to 21 days. And unfortunately, because that is the only funding that we currently receive if a young person stays longer than that 21 days, actually, and it's not like we haven't allowed young people to stay longer than 21 days, because certainly if we don't have a safe place to discharge them to, we're not going to discharge them back to homelessness. But the federal guidelines under our federal grant, which supplies about 40% of our operational costs, states that we have to do a turnaround within 21 days. And we've been pretty effective with that.
Let me bore into the financing a bit. You said that you get less than a third of your funding from the federal government. I gather you don't get state or local money?
Currently, we do not.
So the other two-thirds is fundraising on your part?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there a story of a client that sticks with you?
Well, there was a young man that actually contacted our agency. This young man actually texted me and just simply said, "Hello, how are you?" I said, "I'm fine, how are you?" And we kind of went back and forth, and he eventually said that he was homeless and that his teacher had given him my name and my number and suggested that he contact me to see if we might be an agency that could help him. And when I met with this young person, he shared with me that him and his mother had been homeless since he was 8 years old. Now, when he came to see me, he was 16. But this young man said him and his mother had been out living on the streets, sleeping in bathrooms and bus stations. They would sometimes go out to the airport and just stay all night. They would get on the bus and ride as long as they could until they would make them get off. But this started when he was 8 years old. Mom had a problem with alcohol, and that by the time he made it to junior high, high school, that he literally lived between four of his friends' homes, that he would stay at one friend's house, you know, "Hey, man, you know, me and my mom are having some problems. Do you mind if I crash on your sofa? Do you mind if I stay tonight?" And he said, and even in some of those situations, they would sneak him in at night. And as soon as that one friend would say, you know, like, "Hey, you know, it's been about 2 weeks since you've been here. You know, is everything okay at home?" And he's like, yeah, "I'm going home tomorrow. You know, I was going to let you know, talk to my mom, we worked it out." And then he would go to the next friend's house. Well, this particular year, though, one of the friends said to him, "You know, I noticed like every so many months, you're back at my house, okay?" And he said, "You sure you're okay?" And the friend told his teacher that he was suspicious that something was going on. The teacher actually spoke with the young man, and that resulted in the call that I got that Saturday. Well, this young man came into our program, 16 years old, and we worked with him. That young man, when he left our program, went into a very stable environment, graduated from Coppin Academy, went from Coppin Academy and got accepted into Morgan State University, where he's a junior right now. And he's currently also working full-time with one of the state agencies in the state of Maryland.
What do you take from that story?
What I took from that story is that connected to the right supports and resources, that every kid out there could thrive if they just had access to the right programs and the supportive services, and that most of these children really do want help. The other thing that really kept me connected with this young man, he said that for him, it was just a shame of telling somebody that he was homeless. He just couldn't bring himself to do it. And had his friend not told his teacher, he may have never made it to our agency.
After two decades of providing a safe space and resources for homeless youth, what is it about this work that speaks to you?
These children so want to be loved. They want to feel like they're part of a bigger family. And for so many of them, they don't feel like they're getting that at home. And so I think what keeps me tied to the work is that I see a whole world of young people who really are our future. And if we miss the opportunity to really sow good seed into these children, we are destroying our future. I am clear, as much as We have systems that say they want to end homelessness. There is no way that that will happen as long as we neglect to take care of the youngest of the homeless. And that's these unaccompanied homeless minors.
Cindy, thank you for doing something about it. Thank you.
Thank you for putting it out there.
Cindy Williams is founder and executive director of Loving Arms, a shelter for young people who are homeless. We've got more information about Loving Arms at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. As we mark World Humanitarian Day, we might think of this advice from renowned tennis professional, philanthropist, and public health advocate Arthur Ashe. When the world's problems begin to feel insurmountable, he said, "Start where you are. Use what you have. Do what you can." On the Record's director and engineer is Nathan Sterner. Maureen Harvey and Melissa Gear produced the program. John Ahrens wrote and recorded the On the Record theme music. I'm your host, Sheila Cast. Glad you're with us on the Record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.